Is Harn really a low magic setting? Or are there powerful arcane forces just waiting to be unleashed? Hey everyone, Kerry Dolan here, and welcome back to Mind Your Manners. Today, we're diving deep into the mystical heart of Harn with the one and only Walt McAtee. Walt is here to blow the lid off of Harn's arcane mysteries, explore the enigmatic Shekpavar, and show us just how potent magic can be in this incredible world. We're talking fireballs, teleportation, and a whole cosmology you're not going to expect. If you're ready to challenge your perceptions and uncover the true nature of magic in Harn, you are in the exact right place. And if you love deep dives into TTRPG lore and mechanics like this, do me a huge favor. Hit that like button and make sure you subscribe to Mind Your Manners so you don't miss out on our future discussions. Without further ado, let's get into it. Walt McAtee, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how's it going? How are you? Good to be back. Appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, well, the door is always open, so.
Oh, well, I'm lurking outside it, so that's why I got here so quickly, yeah.
Well, it has been a couple months since we've been able to chat. Today, we're going to focus on the mysteries, in particular, the arcane mysteries. So our magic users, magic in the world of Harn, and all associated things. Why don't we actually start off with the nature of magic in Harn? Harn is always accused of being a low fantasy system. And I think
I think
we are going to blow up that theory today.
Yeah, I think a reading of any edition's spell descriptions would blow that up. And my favorite edition is the HMG version, which was, written by Crosby. Harn World, I call it Harn HMG Magic, but it's really HMG Shekpavar. The idea that it's low magic to me would be the effects are quite limited, and there are some limiting factors on magic, maybe compared to the kind of D&D type magic, but a lot of it is not. You'll find a version of teleportation. You certainly will find fireballs, almost direct versions of D&D type fireballs, both. So in that sense, if you're surprised to hear that there are fireballs on Kythera, there are. And there's specialists who, so I think the...
I'm gonna back you up one second, because you dropped the phrase Shekpavar. And so for folks that are coming into Harn for the first time, could you just explain that term and what that is?
Right. I'll tell you what, let me better answer your original question, which is sort of the nature of magic. Is it a low magic? I would say it's not a low magic. But essentially, you also use the term the mysteries. This is, at least in HMK, the recent edition, there are three categories, but this all is traced back to decades-old writings by Crosby that essentially the arcane, the divine, and then a semi-new official term, the astral mysteries. And the arcane would include spell-casting wizards, mages, but it would also include astronomy, astrology, although astronomy is has its applications, but astrology, alchemy, those are also considered arcane. But the most prevalent representatives or practitioners of arcane magic is an organization or mages within an organization called the Shekpavar. I'll give you a quick world definition of what magic is and how, and it's important. We're not going to really discuss much of the divine mysteries, but it is important as gamers and role players, in games of D&D, the divine powers are described as magic. It's just a different way to tap in, at least in, I most recently heavily played D&D in third edition, but I own all editions. And it's essentially, priests are casting magic. It's just a different source. It comes from their gods. And wizards are, drawing on some sort of primal force. or different techniques to, but it's equally magic. That's one of the major, the initial differences in the reality of the world of Kythera. And the word for reality is actually Kalestia. It's
Right.
in the name of our company, Kalestia Productions, but in the world it means reality. So the mysteries of reality, the mysteries of Kalestia, are divided, at least as the game, and somewhat in world also, but the arcane, the divine. And the divine powers are not magic. You're not, you do have miracles in Kythera, but a mortal can never control the effect, the outcome. They cannot dictate. And this has technically been written about for decades, but in terms of the game itself, not necessarily addressed as much, in my opinion, but HMK does. Versus
Right.
magic. Oh,
Yeah,
sorry,
we get
go
into
ahead.
the whole concordat there and how everything
Right.
is limited on the divine side of things.
And it, oh, no, sorry, go ahead.
No. I wanted to just come back to you mentioned the reality and prior to this discussion, you'd hooked me up with a little essay from Robin. On reality in the setting. I think it's important for folks to know that there's like this whole cosmology to the setting. There are multiple planes, like we have in some other fantasy RPGs. We've got other worlds wholesale that, are destinations for adventure. So it's more expansive than just Arrn as an island, the world that everything's placed in Lithia over here, all that. We also have the concept of principle, underlaying everything as the means of manipulation for mages in the system.
That's right. So that's the so mages are drawing on these primal forces of Kalestia. Now, I do want to note that you're right, Kythera is the name of the world that Harn is on, and it's one of dozens of known worlds in the reality, and specifically with the, it's one of seven kind of central. Kythera is connected fairly strongly to six other worlds, one of which is our Earth, one of which is Midgard, literally Tolkien's Middle Earth. Although a lot of players want to or like to downplay that, that's one of the worlds. So magic doesn't necessarily work on these other worlds the way it works on Kythera. And it's good they bring that up. So this theory of magic, of how it works, is specifically how it works on Kythera. So that, you can travel to Earth, but it's sort of explicitly stated that technology and magic are incompatible. So you're very skilled wizard who shows up in, 18th century Earth will likely lose their spell casting. So it doesn't transfer necessarily. Now, game masters can spin that. I'm just referencing things that are pointed out in these are in this reality article that the for the most part, what we'll be discussing is how magic works on Kythera, even within the Kalestia, even within the larger reality of these other worlds. So when you travel to Midgard, your magic would be likely curtailed, right? I guess Middle Earth would be somewhere in between Earth and maybe Kythera in terms of the magic use.
To ground us on Kythera, let's talk about the ubiquity of magic throughout the world. How would you describe that? Because I think that's where we tend to get into like the high fantasy, low fantasy, type stuff.
Well, so the most prevalent organization is the Sekhpavar, and it's an actual guild. The
Found
theory,
throughout Lithia.
throughout mostly Lithia. Lithia, there's three continents, and you're showing the Northwest. section of the central continent. And this northwest section is called Venarive. And it is, it's, but it goes to the far east coast as well. And the Shekpavar is known as an organization, is known to exist on this entire central continent. The other two continents, it's not really been verified. This also brings up the point that the philosophy of how magic works for the Shekpavar, actually the philosophy predates the organization. So you could almost distinguish between two terms, Pavarism, mm-hmm. and then the Shekpavar. And the Shekpavar is not only the name of the organization, but it's the name of the occupation. I'm a Shekpavar, you know, I'm a Shekpavar mage. But Pavarism predates, in the history of the world, predates the founding of the, or the beginnings of the founding of the Shekpavar by thousands of years. And just a quick rundown of this history, because it's important for the arcane mysteries. About 20,000 years ago, entities, or quote unquote, a people called the Earth Masters, are said to have appeared on Kythera. They were around for 5,000 years, and then they suddenly disappeared. The only traces are their artifacts. You could almost call them technologies. Mm-hmm. The most famous of which are godstones, which are teleportal, physical edifices. But then they also have all sorts of, you know, gadgets. And, you know, it's very science fantasy. I would say that there's a mystery to them that is mostly beyond even the Shekpavar. They seem to have been able to figure out how to recharge them, but no one in recorded history, even in recorded secret history, has been able to recreate or replicate these Earthmaster devices. So, mm-hmm. And then about 10,000 years ago, after the Earthmasters left, the Elven folk arrived. From right. strife on another planet. And it's largely felt that either one or the other, or likely both of these sources, were drawn upon in the creation of Pavarism, the elves, and then before mm-hmm. them, the Earth Masters. But then Pavarism develops its essential tenets, and you reference these principles. And these are just the energies of nature. But then slow, I would say over these thousands of years, maybe a couple of thousand years ago, you start to see what are called the six convocations of the Shekpavar. Mm-hmm. It's not, at least on the surface level, it's not unlike a school of magic, you know, the colleges in Warhammer, this sort of thing. And these convocations are organized around different principles, you know.
Yeah, we got the Pavaric wheel, I will throw on the screen here mm-hmm. for folks to see. And you know what's interesting here is that it's based around kind of like metamaterials. I don't know, like mm-hmm. Air, water, fire, magic, or what's the other one? Metal, not magic, and soul.
Right.
Air. Yeah. But they don't use a view that, you know, the world is made only of these things, which is
Yeah, it's written that maybe early on people took it literal, that it was sort of this atomized. But it is important that, earth, metal, fire, air, aura or spirit, aura and water. So it means both literally those elements, so that the Shekpavar that initially focuses on the water convocation, or the water element, is part of a group called the Odifshe convocation. So it literally means the manipulation of actual water, what's called ethereal water, which is basically half on the astral plane and half real. So like with they can manipulate real water. They can go down to the seashore and manipulate volumes of water. So in that sense, it's very elementalist. But it can also mean the manipulation of the principle of water, which is this ethereal energy. And so you can conjure ethereal water into the real world, and you know, you can walk through it, so you function with it in half measure to how you function in real water. But what's also important, and we've selected Odishe as our example, that it also means conceptual ideas that relate to water, which is cold and darkness, silence, and even stasis. So the Odishe, Shekpavar mage, is able to more easily create spells that, you know, the darkness spell is located in the Odishe convocation. But it can also mean, and this is something that I, when I was writing HMK, I wanted to emphasize even more conceptual darkness, which is the hiding of knowledge. And so there's a spell called Enigma that deals in secrets, right? The other thing, you mentioned the Pavark wheel, which at some point has been shown. Odishe is next to Savoria, which deals with aura, but also knowledge and the mind and emotion. And so it's logical. And on the other side of Odishe is Fivria, which is earth. And of course, water courses through earth. So it's logical that it's adjacent to that literal element. But it's also logical that it's adjacent to knowledge, which is part of Savoria. They're the classic sages, I suppose. They deal in mind and emotion, but also aura, which is a characteristic that all living beings have. And it's their strength of connection with their soul. And this is the main conduit that allows for spell casting. So mages become skilled at basically channeling these energies into what's called the form. And I'm kind of jumping around here, but form and principle are the two primary notions of how spells work. You know, you spend many days, sometimes months, perfecting a form, and the form is how you imagine the spell to work. You know, I want a darkness spell, so you create a form that and then you end up channeling darkness principle, and if all goes well, and if you've done it with enough proficiency, the spell's effect will take place. So all these, the convocational wheel is important, and this is also a slight distinction with perhaps in other games where these schools of magic are much more demarcated, right. Where if you select this one school of magic, you are incapable of maybe wielding the other schools of magic. In the Shekpavar theory, you're more capable of, like, if you, once you, and actually at the beginning of your training, it's been found that you, when you, attune is the term used. You attune yourself to one of these six convocations. And that makes learning spells just in general more easy. The ultimate goal, and there's something called the gray mage, which is, you know, the quite experienced mage who has mastered, at least to some proficiency, spells from all six convocations. So what that implies is, while you start off in one of these six schools throughout your career, I would say most mages, maybe not all of them, but many of them of great talent, their ultimate goal is to achieve a certain level of mastery in all six. And then there's a special spiritual and, frankly, sort of, I guess, physical process you go through, mostly spiritual, you know, where you have now mastered all six and you become a gray mage. And so your previous limitations, and as you can imagine, our example, Odishe mage, starts off having a, well, as most know, Harn Master is a skill-based system. It's in the BRP family, 0 to 100. You roll percentile dice when you're trying to make a sword or swing a sword to strike someone, but also to cast each of your spells, you make a skill roll. At the beginning of your career, it's easier, it's easier to cast spells from the one convocation that you've attuned to. But even though you're attuned to that convocation, you can still learn and attempt to cast these other spells. But those become open to you as your ML and as your mastery increases. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, before we get into like the character side of things and the
Okay,
skills that we're using,
yeah.
I want to back us up just a little bit to Chantry.
Okay, yeah. Oh, you asked about the ubiquity, and I didn't answer. Do you want to?
That's okay. I think we can slot that into kind of like the GM advice
Right.
section
Sure,
and
sure.
kind of talk about
Gotcha.
that.
Okay.
So there's kind of two things that are foundational for any Pvarak character or NPC or anything like that. One
Right.
is kind of the convocation, the section that you're attuned to, right?
Right.
The next is the chantry that you come through, that you
Right.
study under. These are spread throughout the world. Tell me a little bit just about the background of those. Like, how does this differ from other systems where, yeah, there's schools of arcane knowledge. What makes these specifically arcane, and how should this inform backstories and things like that?
Well, on the Pvarak wheel, the six convocations, you're right. Each particular Shekpavar chantry, the physical place, is dedicated to one of the six schools that, to help in the learning. That amount of focus is required. So they are physically isolated often. Now they're found in large cities, of course, but many of them are in the countryside and isolated. And so this in part, the organization itself does kind of get to the high low magic question of what are, because ultimately I'm hoping to get to throughout, maybe sprinkled throughout or all at once, there are a handful of challenges that face a playing a Shekpavar. And frankly, one of those challenges is that the Shekpavar organization is, I would say, very formalized.
Yes.
It takes on, and this is my word, I don't know if other players of Harn would use this language, but to me, it takes on almost a monastic feel. And I don't want to confuse that with the divine mysteries or whatever, but just in terms of how the places look, and the level of organization and laws. There are actually five very specific laws
Well,
that
I mean,
you have to adhere to as a member.
specifically, it's called a chantry, which
Right,
is associated
right.
with priests,
That's
right?
right.
So,
Yeah.
you know,
So
it is very monastic.
right. And it's, in terms of you might be the Shekpavar approach, like I said, is really after the discovery of the Pvarak principles themselves, and that's important because it does mean that there are other non well there's basically three categories. There's Shekpavar Pvarak magic, and this is what they gather at these chantries. It's very, for the most part, text based, which is another monastic thematic nod. But then there's also non-Shekpavar Pvarak magic, which is implied by the history of the development, which is all canon. So that does mean, hedge witches or quote unquote sorcerers, whatever you want to describe it as. You can practice Pvarak magic and not be a member of the Shekpavar technically, in terms of the development of these realities throughout Kythera. Then there's the third category is non-Pvarak magic, which is implied and not even implied, is explicitly said that it exists. So the chantries are of the first category, the Shekpavar, Pavaric magic, where you're studying these six elements, specializing in one. You know, in all of Vinariveda, which is essentially the map you have behind you, there's the southern Vinarian Sea is included off map, but there are about 50 major chantries scattered throughout Vinariveda. Each chantry is rated on a 1 to 5 star scale, which measures, you know, resources of study, and not necessarily the number of masters that are there. It can influence that. And then there are about an equal number of what are called minor chantries. Those are the 1 and 2 star chantries, which there's an actual canon table that lists these. So if you have a character from a particular realm, you can locate the nearest chantry for your budding Shekpavar character. So I do want to dip into the, you know, so I don't know, this is the map is roughly equivalent to Eurasia and Northern Africa in size. So about 100 of major and minor chantries throughout that area. And there's maps in the HMK rulebook that pinpoint where these chantries are for each of the six convocations. These aren't including a larger organization called the Guild of Arcane Lore. There is a kind of an umbrella location, guild that also includes astrologers and alchemists. But the chantries are specifically for the mages, the spellcasters.
Let's give a real quick overview.
Okay.
For someone, before we dig into what it means to become Shekpavar and
right.
You know, how do you create a mage character in this setting, wizard, whatever.
Right.
Let's just outline the types of Pavaric characters. So we've got your classic spellcasters are going to be the Shekpavar.
Right.
We have your sorcerers, which are going to be kind of your talent-focused mages.
There is, and sorcerer is not an official term. It's not.
No, I'm trying to equate but it. But folks.
Actually, the term in the rule book is called an invoker. That's a term that was created in HMK. It might have been referenced in other contexts, but in this game, it's the non-Shekpavar spellcasters who have. There are things called arcane talents, which are innate abilities that. Which I know, and it reminds one of, you know, the sorcerer class, right?
A little bit.
You know, where it's a natural ability. You do have that. It's extremely rare. It's a random thing at the beginning. Not all Shekpavar even have it. But if you are a natural, this is things like telepathy, clairvoyance, being a medium, right? Being able to see into, if you will, the spirit world. You become a highly attractive candidate for the Shekpavar if you have those. So sorry, but that's a second category. And then you were, I feel like you were getting ready to say something
we also
else.
I think that's pretty much it. I'm just, you know, high level, but we also have alchemists and diviners and
right.
Why don't we just touch on alchemy real quick and kind of, this is like not necessarily, it's a Pavaric mystery.
Right.
Or a Pavaric character. But it's not a spellcaster, so
yeah. Exactly. Well, alchemy has an interesting history within the publishing. It has an interesting publishing history within the game and the world. That and astrology have always been skills in the skills table, but not necessarily not treated with as much attention as Pavarism or spellcasting. And in fact, some, in my opinion, previous editions. And I use the term confuse. I think they conflate herbalism and alchemy. It might be a particular outlook, but alchemy has always been referenced as an arcane mystery, but it's never been given really specific arcane rules. It ends up being much more mundane. HMK makes a more formal distinction between mundane, if exotic, herbalism, you know, a healing poultice, and then actual magic elixirs. And And this the alchemy rules presented in HMK are Pivarik. They are based upon the six convocations, but alchemy in HMK is not merely a spell in elixir form. There's a collection of elixirs that have completely unique effects apart from every single one of the 200 plus spells that the Shek-Pivar that are provided as examples for Shek-Pivar spells. So alchemy is given a particular arcane treatment in HMK, which I think it's fair to say was not the case for good or bad in previous editions. Same way for astrology. It was sort of
I mean,
hand waved. It's a skill on your sheet, but it was certainly treated in terms of an ast sort of astronomical applications. But in terms of a magic, a kind of arcane skill, it was not. It's never been given any rules, and our HMK does, and it has to do with fate and seeing the future and this sort of thing.
your treatment of it certainly gives it a lot more than most fantasy games. Where usually it's just relegated to a skill roll and that's it, right? So we've got,
Right.
we've got a full routine. We've got a lot of unique tasks and factors going into it. So it is fleshed out.
And with that said, though, they are not necessarily balanced. The Shek-Pivar are not balanced to fighters or to astrologers or to hunters. So this is where this would be my first point about low magic is. The Shek-Pivar characters are very powerful in a campaign. And in that sense, I would say they properly wield disproportionate power in a lot of ways. Only they can do certain things in this way. And it's there is no so that would be my first miss I guess first defense, I guess, or I don't know if it's, of course, low magic is not necessarily something to be defended against, but I would just say objectively untrue in this sense. So in that sense, the Shek-Pivar character, because their spells, like I said, are not, oh, okay, well, the Shek-Pivar, are in Harn and they've been that way for 40 years, but when you read the spell lists, they're very weak or, it's not that at all. I would say most of the, and whether Harn players, like this description, I would say many of their spells are quite recognizable in the larger RPG expectation of what magic can do.
Well, let's take that as a transition to talk
Okay.
about creating a Shek-Pivar character, and
Okay.
no disrespect to our diviner arcane characters as well, but
Right.
we'll touch on them some other time.
Yeah.
We have kind of we have to approach this where there's a decision being made, right, about what part of an arcane Pivarist character's life we're visiting them in the game, right?
Right.
Because we do have this guild set up here, and we have different statuses as a character works through the guild on their way to becoming a Grey Master potentially.
Right.
And we can join them at any point during that. For your money, where do you tend to start your Pivarik characters as when you're running a game and or
Right.
as a character, what or as a player, what do you enjoy most? Two different questions, but
Sure,
kind of
sure.
important here.
No, it's I think that's central, and you're getting to something central to what we were wanting to do with HMK. Traditionally, in previous editions, past 3 or 4 decades, the Shek-Pivar, all characters mostly followed the classic paradigm of being a 20 to 25-year-old fresh off the farm and headed for adventure, right? And so you're a neophyte for the most part. And there's been rules for creating veteran characters, but I've never found them as easily to apply a character generation. It takes a little more work. So with HMK, I wanted to come up with the age group idea. And if people who have read the book, when you select a character, you can start as the archetype young character, whether you're a man-at-arms, a hunter, a shekpavar, an apprentice, spellcaster, although technically it's you're sort of a senior apprentice slash journeyman. But I also wanted an integrated system to where you could start off as a 30 or 40-year-old shekpavar mage in the what's called the mature adult age group. And you would have more spells and a higher ML is mastery level. It's the 1 to 100, 0 to 100, or even plus rating. So with a higher ML, you could even start off as an old mage and quite powerful and even more experienced. That I wanted the character gen to be able to be able to work for the particular campaign that players and GM want to run. We're going to run a campaign where all three players are old shekpavar mages. Have at it. Let's do it. You'll be quite powerful, I would say. And you know, compared to your typical 21-year-old senior apprentice. Now, how much more powerful we can dive into, but you know, the first decision when making a shekpavar character is, you know, a lot of this comes down to what the GM will allow. A lot of the old guard, you know, will not want to hear anything aside from a young shekpavar, you know, setting out on their year and a day mission of, you know, trying to be accepted as a true journeyman, this sort of thing, you know. And that might be a play balance issue, but but this applies to to warrior characters too, that you can play the senior commander, right? The 38-year-old veteran, or you can play the old retired general, sort you know, whose command skill literally, right, is high, but maybe they've lost a step. So this applies to creating a shekpavar character in HMK. I would say of all editions, makes it the easiest to tailor that to your campaign. If you want to allow experienced characters,
yeah,
it's quite easy.
As a GM, having that flexibility written directly into the rules is important for some, because you have some folks that are going to be like, oh, well, if it's not in the rules, we're not going to do it. But
you know,
being able to say like, no, we're gonna start here because this is where we're going to get the most bang for our buck for the amount of time we have for this campaign and how often we're going to meet and all that. So
exactly, we were right before the session, we were discussing the classic bit of research, right? The typical campaign lasts, you know, a dozen sessions. And that's, for most of us, I think that is true, right? Mm-hmm. So if we've got 12 3-hour evenings ahead of us, what do we want to get done? And if you want to start off as a master shekpavar mage from night one, hour one of the campaign, let's do it. And, you know, that's between player and GM.
Well, let's talk, since we're getting into the character stuff.
Okay.
What are the most important skills if we're going to specifically try to create a character that's going to be shekpavar, classic mage?
Right.
You know, we've got a couple things in play. We've got your aura stat.
That's right.
What else do we need to keep an eye on as we're looking at these characters?
All skills in HMK are based upon two attributes, you know, strength, dex, agility, this sort of thing. And it's aura primarily, but secondarily reasoning. Or in previous editions, it was called intelligence. But in HMK, it's been divided into reasoning and creativity. Creativity comes into researching spells. So aura and reasoning are the primary, aura being most important. But creativity is important. And beyond that, those would be the, you know, if we're just in terms of making a character, and do you need a minimum? Well, probably this gets into the politics or the in-world, you know, expectations of these chantries. With political connections, like with everything, it might help. But having, probably less than a 13, and I would say seems like typical Shekpivar would be in the 15s. This is on a 1 to 20, kind of a 3d6 scale. And there's another skill called spirit, which every character has. And this is the strength of your soul. So when you But in game terms, when you try to resist spells, it's often a spirit test. But there's other applications of it, and that secondarily is important for Shekpivar. But it's mainly the aura and reasoning attributes, and then there's a single skill called Pivarism. You do end up getting a rating in each of the six convocations, and then you get specific ratings in each spell that you have. And you can progress those previous editions. Harmaster Gold, you would progress spell by spell. When I say progress, I mean skill checks, and you would raise each spell. Some editions have dealt on a convocational level where you raise your primary convocation skill level, and then that raises concomitantly each spell within that convocation. And HMK offers the option of just raising Pivarism. I mean, it's a singular philosophy after all. And as you can tell, that's how I run my games. That mage characters, in terms of having, you have ML in all three, and they can, vary. But in terms of a skill check, it's just Pivarism. And if you go
Yeah,
up
I
by
like
one
that.
point,
It's elegant. It covers all the different convocations, factors in your sun sign. Like, it
Yeah.
worked really
Oh,
well.
right. And yeah, that's another thing to point out, that your sun sign modifies that. Now, there are veteran Harn players who would not want to approach it that way, and so there's ways you can do it spell by spell, or even convocation by convocation. But so it's that I will say, if we're still talking about character gen, having a unified Pivaric skill, I think. It made it easier in some sort of focusing of the character gen process, that you're just essentially improving that one skill at character gen that helps out. Now, mage Shekpivar characters near the end of right before they start adventuring, right before the campaign starts, you do get a special of allotment of what are called arcane research points. These are only in the game at character gen, and these allow you to select your spells. And a version of these have been in all previous editions, so that at character gen, you got 15 points to select your spells. Now, going back to one of the things we discussed earlier about the different three different age groups. If people new to Harn are wondering, yeah, how many spells do I start with? Well, you can run the numbers on this, and kind of as I've done, and young characters, young Shekpivar, the classic Harn Master Shekpivar, starts off with a rating in the 60s, right? The ML, as it's called, and
Yeah,
probably has. Oh, I'm sorry. Go.
to put the rank to it, they're
Yeah.
the senior apprentice, the Satya Mavar.
Satya Mavar, exactly. That's the term. Probably around a dozen spells, maybe 10. Three of those are, or what are called neutral spells. And we should have I should have in addition to the six convocations in the outer part of the wheel, you'll see the shaded center is called the neutral convocation, or the gray spells. And those are spells that either their creation require more than one convocation. You simply can't even create the spell because they deal with multiple concepts at one time, or they just don't readily fit the other six categories. So a lot of spell creations spells are neutral spells. Detect magic is a neutral spell, and all Shekpivar learn detect magic and this sort of thing. So a young character could really, it would be, you'd be hard pressed to start off with more than a dozen spells. And And each spell is ranked 1 to 6. Previous editions have gone higher than that. And even though HMK stops at a 6, theoretically they could go higher if you want to have higher complexity level is what it's called, spell level, complexity level. Our 30 or 40-year-old HMK mage is probably going to get into the 70s, and if they're very talented, maybe the 80s in the Pavarism skill. But they're still, just because of the formula for how many of these points you have at character gen, you're likely not going to have more than 15 or 20 spells. And then
So
the old mage, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
the one thing that I want to call out here is that you do have those different lo those ranks broken out by Pavarism skill level as well.
Right. That's right. Yep.
Once you hit that 70, you're now in the kind of the journeyman phase.
Right.
What
And
I
that's the oh, sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
no 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 the only thing I want to say here is there's a fantastic call to adventure built into each of these different
Right.
ranks
Right.
where, the senior apprentice is kind of just sent out into the world for like up to 5 years, right?
Right.
This
Yep.
is the perfect hook to plug them into, your other peasants that have been rolled up in your
Right.
campaign. But the thing when once we hit that 70 level, the journeyman, assuming there's a ceremony or something, they have to come back with three spells or something of their own
Yeah,
design. And this
that's
is the
right.
thing about Iron Master Magic that really kind of hooks me is, one, we have all these spells built in, but then you're given license and
Right.
direction to create your own, to discover them and find them.
Right.
Like it's
Yes.
an awesome adventure hook.
Yeah.
And we've been touching on some of the spells that you have in here. We've touched on we don't necessarily care about balance. By nature, these are imbalanced characters.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about designing a spell for
Okay.
HMK.
Right.
Where do we draw the lines,
Yeah,
basically?
right. Well, yeah, on that note, the first edition, since the first edition of Horn Master, and it's even stated in the rule book, that it's that the spells you see here are just examples, and it's intended that every single player will, well, or the players will create unique spells for their characters. I enjoy the language of the more recent HM Gold that says, technically speaking, in the world, each spell is unique and this sort of thing. But here are a list of 100 that you can learn, that were created by other mages, and that sort of corresponds with the reality of the RPG experience that most players, when they start, were accustomed to. And HMK offers over 200 spells already in the book, but it is so. And I wanted to say that because there are some, purists who. And I believe them when they say when they make a Sekhbavar character, all their spells are unique. Okay, yeah, that. But I think for the rest of us starting off, you sort of, well, I'm gonna, this spell sounds like Fireball. I want it. Okay, there it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's I
I
wanted to
mean,
say that first, but yeah,
yeah, there's a big difference between running your fourth Iron Master campaign and running your first.
right. Yeah, that's
Like
right.
we need to
Yeah.
have a baseline.
Yeah, and I just want to point out that language over the years has been incorporated to reflect that in world, that you are learning this spell created by your master, and you're taking a stab at it yourself. So it's not completely created. But so with that said, and there are, famous game systems, Ars Magica, right? Where spontaneous casting and this sort of thing is been successfully implemented. I ultimately feel like spell creation, and I say this in the book, is game art. It's not game science. You could try, and there's been some great fanon work and forum posts on maybe how to quantify these complexity levels and all this. I find it not, I'm not saying it's not doable, but I just think it's the easier approach to me, however, difficult it sounds, is to become familiar with the 200 spells listed. But I am leading up to three or four things I want to point out about Harnworld that will also guide your spell creation. But ultimately, you are balancing it towards your playing group's appetite and tolerance for high or low. You know, how much you want to tweak that up or down. But I do want to point out, and I've there are a handful of realities of the way the canon world is written. And I think this is throughout all editions. That, for instance, a true flying has not been discovered or figured out. There is no flying spell. There's just not. Now, and I don't think in any edition. Now, there's certain versions of it. There's this, Pelion is the convocation of fire. And there's a spell where you basically turn yourself into ethereal fire and smoke and sort of float off, right? Not fully necessarily under your own control. With greater mastery, you have more control. So that's a version of flying. But I'm frankly talking about the D&D flying spell. That reality has not been discovered. And these are important world design decisions that I think were important that were made before I came along. The second spell restriction: true mind control has a very important kind of restriction on it, and it's called psychic bond. So there is a spell that sounds like mind control. You go up to the guard at the gate. I now control your mind. The catch to it is that while this guard is under your spell's effect, you have a psychic bond with it, such that the physical shock that he or she suffers is inflicted upon the spellcaster. So yeah, there's mind control, but telling the guard to walk off the cliff is not a good idea. So this is a reality of Kalestia, or this is an element of Kalestia that ends up being, I think veteran gamers will see, in my mind, if you're attracted to Harnworld, to Kythera, are nice. Right, because it takes care of the fifth level D&D mage who suddenly has flying. And you know, that's sort of the stereotype, right? Because now you can get over the castle wall, and it changes narratives, and it kind of becomes a rock paper scissors scenario. So, mind control has limits. Also, long range clairvoyance has always been somewhat limited. There's a term called true form that Crosby mm-hmm. spoke of that I've made formal in HMK because it's a great idea. True form is another name for your soul. In order to really conduct long range clairvoyance, you have to have arcanely perceived a person's true form, you know, in their aura. So this is why you can't spy on the king's dinner, you know, from 10 miles away, because maybe you've never seen the king's true form before. So it opens up. So it's another slight restriction, and these are discussed. So that would be the second, if you're wanting to, you know, how to create a Harnworld spell, is, well, one, become familiar with the ones that are in there. And I would go back to previous editions and see how that's changed.
Well, I'm going to put a call out to the, I'm going to put a call out to the community here.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're a Harnmaster player and mm-hmm. you've developed spells or had someone at your table that's developed spells,
right.
I want you to post your favorite one in the comment. I would love to see it.
Yeah.
Like I'd like to hear the creativity that folks have come up with. Because mm-hmm. you know, there's a tendency for gamers to try to go for like the biggest fireball, right? But
sure.
It's the utility spells that I always find most interesting. And I think mm-hmm. the spells that have been presented here in HMK are very interesting because they're not just the biggest fireballs, right?
Right, right.
They're very wide ranging.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I was just bringing that up as the initial low magic, you know, sort of.
I mean, can you think of any that you've come across either at the table or you know, on the forums or anywhere that you've seen that really stuck out to you as like, oh, that's actually brilliant. Like,
There are a
you know,
couple
not to
of,
put you on the spot.
right. Well, the each convocation has 28 spells. The neutral convocation has 32. They were, I would say, 95% versions of what you'll find in Harnmaster Gold, Shekpavar. So if you want to see, I would recommend picking up that PDF. And you can see where I've tweaked the HMK approach. But there are a couple that made it in that are brand new, that came from playtest campaigns or just my campaigns. And one of which was from a character who was, in typical player fashion, was trying to sneak into the castle, or there's some version of that scenario, right? And he was playing, it was an Odifshe mage, and so swam was trying to figure out a way to preserve light sources, torches, and the like. Given the fact that he was going to have to swim, I think through the moat or something, and so he spent several days. And this is another thing: spell research takes some time. You just can't. It's mo in HMK. The average time is about a month to create a new spell. You just can't. There are things called something called spontaneous casting, but it's quite limited. So this character spent a month devising this new spell, and it's one where you can essentially, it's an Odifshe spell that keeps something dry. You can find it in the book, but that was his answer to a campaign, to a story element that he was trying to overcome. And so it's very focused. This is the other thing. These most spells, the canon spells, are quite specific in their effects, right? They're, and so this is different from the Ars Magica, or at least that half of our Ars Magica that allows you to truly cast spontaneously in the moment.
It's an interesting comparison because Ars Magica is also troop play,
Right,
and
right.
when you have a character that's sitting in their tower researching for months or years,
Right.
you're playing a different character. When a Harnmaster character is spending a month researching a spell or something, is the expectation that they're doing that on the road? Is this between
No, it'd be
sessions?
downtime. It would be,
Yeah.
yeah. So it's yeah. Well, the assumption is that you do require research. You require sources of research, which can be other mages. It can be a verbal thing, but it's also can be books and even just your own, notes. And then it's a very well, it is a very monastic baseline of spell learning. And you have, you make a roll at the end of it, and you can adjust if you roll really well. Accomplished the research more quickly. Things can go wrong on critical failure. This is the other the there's really this inter the discussion of spell design is a it's part of an important discussion of, well, what is, you've described mages as not balanced to fighters. Why wouldn't I play a mage? Or what are the restrictions? We are already discussed the actual spell reality of what, the canon Celestia has not yet allowed for a flying spell. Mind control can be dicey. Long range clairvoyance is more difficult. It's not so immediately performed. But above that is what I would call the political restrictions of being a member of the Shekpavar. There are five specific rules that if you don't follow, you could be considered renegade. So it's highly regulated. So that was kind of the number one. The spell restrictions is another limiting factor, or what makes it difficult. There is an actual skill role. We've already mentioned it in spell casting. That's the limitations of technique. And this is where I've dialed Well, we've HMK is set, sort of in a 60 to 80% ML range. There's various ways to improve it, and harder spells will reduce your chances. But when you're when the when you're called upon in that narrative moment, you have a only a two-thirds percent chance of succeeding, right? What does that mean when you fail? So that's kind of a dicey thing. There are things you can do to improve it, obviously through your own study and skill. Higher complexity level spells are more difficult. But the other limiting factor is whether you succeed or fail. M most often, you'll t it requires you to expend fatigue, and that's a numerical thing: 5 points of fatigue, 10 points of fatigue, and that r translates as a -5 or a -10 to your next spell. And that will usually happen whether you succeed or fail. If you get a critical success, much of that fatigue is mitigated or eliminated sometimes. The
Let's
length
talk for a
of
moment,
oh, okay.
just to interject about
Yeah,
failure,
please.
because it's
Okay.
inherent to the
Yeah.
spellcasting routine.
Right.
At kind of a couple different points, right? Because you can abort a casting and you still have to make the roll, and you could fail on the
Right.
on that action and
Yes.
cause damage and aural shock and things like that. Now we're not going quite to DCC, Dungeon Crawl Classics levels of
Oh,
insane
right.
spell failure or anything like that, but
Yeah.
it does make every spell casting a calculated risk, right?
Exactly. That's right. Yeah.
So
Yeah. What keeps you from casting all day long? Right. Classic question. It's not Vancian where you have spell slots. It's not spell points either, right? Where I have 50 spell points and that's how many you get in the day. The casting fatigue is one of those limitations, right? I mean, just by the you can create things called founts, which absorb. And in fact, and you almost routinely, that's one of your first magic items, which we haven't talked about. They do exist in Kythera. They're called artifacts. An artifact to help you absorb that fatigue. But the looming spell misfire, the critical failure, is you could is I think it's when I have new players that come to the game, unfamiliar with world and system, and who play a mage, it's not you can mitigate the fatigue or if you come fresh to this narrative situation, you have no fatigue, so that's not necessarily always a problem. But the looming spell misfire, might only happen 5% of the time or something. But if the it's fairly debilitating, I'd say half the results are 40 points of fatigue, or maybe like as you alluded to, what's called aural shock, which will there's a not low chance that a spell misfire will leave you unable to cast spells for a day. It's certainly not in the immediate narrative. Situation, right? So players, what I like about the spell misfire chance is that there's in my mind a coinciding between the player's hesitancy and to over spell casting and with the character in the world too. There's it helps that out, and players realize, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean the fatigue is an immediate problem. But I think ultimately that the spell misfire makes, okay, so I'm not necessarily going to cast my warp wood on this door because, we can get it open. And also, is it really worth it? I think that's an ongoing internal, sometimes external dialogue, Shekhbavar players have. Is it really necessary in this moment?
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's the other, we talked a little bit about political implications earlier. If you're in a place that's, if you're in a city and you're casting something and you are going to potentially create a principal leak in the surrounding area, the authorities are not going to look kindly on that.
That's quite correct. Yeah, those are the five rules of the Shekhbavar. One of those is would maybe two or three of those would be you would have committed offense against. And so there's you would yeah your bosses would be on you, and so you could get in trouble politically. You're right. Yeah, that's the other
Yeah,
stricture.
I like these built-in tensions because to me, like one of the things I always look at is like, how does a game handle failure? Is it just move on, or is it actually part of the game? Like, what does that look like? And
Oh yeah.
I tend to gravitate towards games that do pull that in as consequential.
Oh
You know, if
yeah.
you're, but you know, we saw it when we did our combat demo, right? Similar things in play. But you mentioned just a moment ago objects and different things in the game world that can be of various use. But one of the things a Shekhbavar character can do is enchant things. And we have a very structured way of handling that. And it's, I think, more so than other game systems I've read. I don't know where I'm going with that thought. It's more intriguing for me to want to try that because of how it's set up, rather than just like, oh, we'll find something along the way. One thing that I thought was really cool is you can have your mage using their blacksmithing skill, because there are huge benefits to them creating the object and then enchanting it themselves. Talk just a little bit about enchanting, because we have minor, we have major objects. You know, what were there any changes here from HMG or
There was a tightening of the screws, is what I would say, from HM Gold. And the Shekhbavar HM Gold Magic PDF, to my mind, had the most extensive artifact creation rules. But they were, and this is part of Crosby's style, and it's an attractive aspect of it that was very suggestive. Like, well, this could be how it works, or maybe it's this. Now, there's numbers provided, but it was he was very much a proponent on of game masters, doing their own thing, which I totally respect. I wanted a little more publishing focus, right? This is a game here. Let me focus this a little bit more. So I like to think that the HMK artifact creation rules are based upon a slightly more formalizing of a step-by-step procedure that is discussed at length in the previous edition, but I always found it a little frustrating to try to get a handle on in terms of how to do this in game. So with that said, there are two types of artifacts. The minor artifacts just have one enchantment, and are they can have a keyword that you utter that invokes them. Most of them require an attunement. There's a process of how you, and a lot of that is actually just keeping it close to your body, and but you become attuned to it by proximate attunement. There's other more direct ways. Sometimes you might have to discover the keyword. Is it etched on the side of the wand in an ancient language? Sometimes it becomes intuitively revealed to you when you upon attunement. Major artifacts have two or more, it's a numerical difference, two or more enchantments, but they require, and this is the term I came up with in HMK called volition. In previous editions, it was called ego. But in HMK, ego is one of two choices. Ego is an artificially created volition where this sword or this ring has its own willpower. And I use that term as a non-game term. But the other type of volition is to power the magic item with the soul of another living creature. And if that living creature, well, no longer a living creature, it could be a spirit. Black magic would sacrifice the body of someone, to power this major artifact with what ends up being their own willpower. So there's two types of volition: ego, which is a spell, it's a neutral spell, and then the willpower of another spirit that is embodied in the magic item. You have to have one of those two to power an artifact that manifests two or more powers, and that requires to sort of command a major artifact is a spirit test. So your own spirit skill is important and is tested to have the magic power. And really, the other thing that I wanted to help clarify is magic artifacts run the gamut of typical sort of RPG magic items. And so it's a little more guidance is, but you can turn one of your own spells that you know into a you can it can be powered by the magic item. You can research a specific spell to do something that doesn't quite exist. But what that would require is if, yeah, I want to do a certain effect on water, but it, I don't, my character doesn't know the spell, and I don't see it listed anywhere else, meaning maybe my master at the Chantry doesn't know. So you can create the spell through the spell creation with really the express goal to enchant it in an item. So the artifact creation does work hand in hand a little bit with the spell creation restrictions and suggestions.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very flavorful. I really enjoyed reading through it. Some of these other things in the game, research and stuff, it does take a good amount of time for the character to set that aside, on the order of days
Right.
and weeks.
Right.
Because what, casting Vessel takes 20 days, I think.
Yeah, it's very it yes, it's a lengthy process, and
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a
most
good downtime activity.
right. Yeah.
Well, I think we are approaching the limit for what we can chat about today.
Sure.
So we're going to have to pick up in the future with alchemy, divination, and then transition over to kind of the divine mysteries. This has been fun. Is there anything that we did not touch on that you absolutely want to get into the conversation?
Let's see. I guess the last thing I would mention, at the top of the discussion, I said there's sort of three categories of magic, and kind of my terms really on Kythera. There's Shekpavar pursuing Pavaric magic. There's non-Shekpavar sort of hedge witches, but it's still Pavaric magic, but they're able to do it through natural attunement and outside the system. And it is stated in canon that Pavarism was practiced before the Shekpavar. So those principles, and there's also a great quote that is in the Harnmaster Shekpavar that says the processes of Pavaric philosophy are things to be discovered rather than invented, so that the Pavaric principles, in fact, are out there to be discovered. So it's not mere, and so that also I think is evidence for why Pavarism was studied before the Shekpavar was formally created. And then the third category I was going to is the non-Pavaric magic. To my knowledge, it hasn't been published an example of it. It's been referred to in the Venarive and in our Thonia module. There are a group of folk called the Andanuji that are in the
Just rolls
Thonian
off the
Alps.
tongue.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's on the first syllable, Andanuji. I'm not quite sure. I need Jeremy here to help me with my pronunciation. But they are a group of, they're described as, by the people, they live in isolation in the mountains of Thonia as hairy tusked giants, that they have secluded among the mountain peaks nearly just a matter of folklore. But they are a real people, a real folk. And speaking of Jeremy, he is sort of a nod. He is developing a non-Pivaric form of magic for among them that's yet to be published. But they and then the other group that I would refer to that is in canon are the Yerezi of far off Camarand, which is the at least on our canon map, far to the west. They're called the Golden People of Camarand and are considered sort of the third elder folk, which is sometimes in quotation marks, meaning after the elves and dwarves are these Golden People of Camarand. Their reputation is, I guess I would describe it as unsavory, human sacrifice and strange goings on in that far off. But I would say, I would posit they likely have a non-Pivaric form of magic, but that's just my speculation. So there aren't a lot, there are very few, if any, non-Pivaric examples of magic, certainly on Lithia that I know of. But other than in these isolated, and so if you, as a game master, if you, it is within canon to create non-Pivaric magic, because it is described as being possible, but they would likely be geographically located. Pivarism has held sway in Lithia for close to 2,000, maybe over, well, over 2,000 years, close to 3,000. The Shek-Pivar may be only in the, last 500 or 600 years. So that would be my last parting shot, that you can explore other forms of magic, and even in terms of the canon, it has been to some extent and will be in the future.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks for spending some time. I appreciate it. And we will get this up as soon as possible. And then we'll see what we can do about getting a discussion on the books for the next section.
Yeah,
So.
and I would suggest the astral mysteries next, maybe. You could do the divine, but the astral mysteries manifest very specific and new shamanism rules.
Oh, that's
And
right, yeah.
shamanism, Crosby always described them as sort of in between or having elements of both magic and miracle. And the shamanism rules was how we express that idea. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate it.
All right, I'm gonna kill the recording.